And we're holding on Yud Amud Beis at the end of the Amud, two lines from the bottom. Yesterday's Daf had talked about the relationship between Antoninus and Rebbe, and how Antoninus would sneak over to Rebbe's house whenever he could, and even serve him personally. We said even that Antoninus would bend down onto the ground so Rebbe could climb up onto his couch or bed on top of him. So now, continuing on that, the Gemara says, Antoninus shamshei l'Rebbe. Antoninus was serving Rebbe, like we said before, serving him at his meal and serving him as a personal aide and all that sort of thing. Similarly, Adarchon shamshei l'Rab. Similarly, Adarchon did the same thing for Rab. Now, who is Adarchon? There was one of the Persian kings of that time. Rav lived in Babel, which was ruled over by the Persians. One of the kings of that time was named Artavon. He's mentioned under that name in a couple of other places in Gemaras and Midrashim. So it may well be that the name Adarchon is the same as a variant of that name. So it actually just says he was an important Goyish official, but based on that, he might have actually been the actual king of Persia. Anyway, he also served Rav in the same kind of way, and therefore Kishochev Antoninus, when Antoninus eventually passed away, Omer Rebbe Nisparda Chavila. So Rebbe said the bond, the connection between us has been broken apart. We were connected together. Nefesh b'nefesh. Rashi says Avosenu, our love, shenikra nefesh b'nefesh. We had a soul to soul love between Antoninus and myself, and now that's been broken. The Maharal also explains that what Rebbe meant by that is, particularly, he says, here, I'm the leader of the Jewish people. Antoninus was the leader of the Goyim. He was the Roman emperor. So now you have, unusually over there, that there should be such a close personal relationship between the leaders of these two segments of the world, the Jews and the non-Jews, so that it's like because we were connected together, the whole world was connected together through us, and now that bond has been broken. Similarly, Kishoch of Adarchon, similarly when Adarchon died, Omer Rav Mispard Chavila, then also Rav said the same expression on him, the bond has been broken and snapped, that now we have, if we say that Adarchon was the king of, was the king of Persia, then the same idea, in other words, he was man in his part of the world, he's the supreme power, and he was, when he was close and friendly together with Rav, who at that time was the supreme power among the Jews. Maharal points out, after all, you know, there were many other Chachamim at that time, Rabbi Yochanan being the most prominent, but nevertheless, though, the fact is that Rav kind of outranks Rabbi Yochanan. We see Rav, for example, is considered a Tana in some places, Rabbi Yochanan is not, and therefore, that justifies saying that more than anybody else, Rav represents the top level of the Jewish people, and now he was, and now that his friend Adarchon is gone, then yeah.
But what bond are we talking about? The Torah forbids us to make relations with Goyim.
Forbids us to intermarry with them, of course. But here we're saying that
not intermarry.
Slow down. You weren't here yesterday, of course, because it was Shabbos and you're not here, but yesterday's Gemara had many, many different stories of how Antoninus considered himself completely bottled to Rebbe. In particular, we said he would serve him. Imagine he's the Roman emperor, and he's going and serving Rebbe food and drink and sneaking through a tunnel every day to learn Torah with him and even bending down on the ground that Rebbe should climb up onto his bed on his back. And he says, I'm going to have some kind of...
I had a question about that.
Hold on.
So one second, too. Okay. One second. I have a question. How come he was learning Torah and he wasn't even converted to Yiddishkeit? That's
first
a big question.
First of all, we talked about yesterday that there are opinions that Antoninus did eventually convert. Second of all, though, a goy does have to learn his Sheva Mitzvahs and things related to that. And on top of that, as a Roman emperor who's responsible for what happens with Jews all over his empire, then there's maybe certain things above and beyond what a regular run-of-the-mill goy needs to know that Antoninus would have had to be taught. So he was being taught Torah, the permissible parts, by Rebbe. But again, there is strong reason to believe that Antoninus either became a ger or at least was very, very close to doing so. So yeah. So the point is, in other words, that he had this unusual relationship.
One second. Is that authorized? When someone wants to convert, you're allowed to teach him Torah?
Well, obviously, how is he supposed to learn for after he converts? Sure. Yeah, Meissen before you, and that people are converting, and the Rav, the base and the supervising the conversion, will arrange for him to take classes, yes, or her to take classes, sure. Anyway, yeah. So that being the case then, so you have this unusual relationship of friendship and bittul between the Roman emperor and Rebbe, and now we're saying between a Persian minister or even the Persian king and Rav, and therefore that justifies us saying, as Rashi says, we had nefesh for nefesh, we had a soul-to-soul love between us. Really, what it is when you think about it, at least as far as Antoninus and Rebbe, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, this really is how it should have been between Yaakov and Esav. They embody in their times the respective, the Yaakov and the Esav of how it should have been, that they would have gotten along and Esav would have served Yaakov, the Rab Yavid Sir and all that. So now when that's gone, then that's it's a major event and worth commenting on and worth being sad about. Yeah, let's go on. So the Gemara tells now another story of, so far we've been talking about Antoninus. We talked about, earlier the Gemara had talked about Ketiah Bar Sholem, a Roman senator who defended the Jews and then was sentenced to death, and he became a ger at the last moment. So now the Gemara tells us another story involving another famous Roman ger. Unculus Vaclonimus is Igayer. Unculus Vaclonimus, or another place that says Eclonicus, whatever, became a ger. In various Midrashim, it says that he was a nephew of one of the Roman emperors, either Titus or Adrianus, so he became a ger. This is the same one who wrote Targum Onkelos. Shodder Kesu Gunda de Remoi Abasre, so the emperor sent a unit of soldiers after him to go and arrest him. Mashchinu Bikroi, well, Unculus was able to persuade them through Psukim. He mentioned them explanations of Psukim about the greatness of the Torah and a person's reward for keeping it. And there was another example of teaching Goyim Torah for a purpose where you, it's not just, in other words, the idea of not teaching Goyim Torah is because after all, it belongs to us Jewish people. But when you're doing it for a reason, such as in the process of Gerus or various other examples like that, then you do have reasons for it, then you do have Hetatum for it, aside from which also, anyway, there are Poskim who say the whole Issa applies primarily to Torah Shabbat Peh, not so much to Torah Shabbat Sad. Anyway, so he persuaded these soldiers via his Droshes of Psukim about the greatness of the Torah and the greatness of Hashem and the Jewish people, and so forth, Igayur, and sure enough, they all became Gerim. The emperor sent another unit of soldiers to arrest Unculus. This time he tells them, he knows what happened the first time. He tells them, like, don't talk with him anything about Yiddishkeit. Sure enough, they went and then arrested Unculus. As they were going along, so Unculus tells them, listen, I understand my uncle, the emperor, said to not talk with you, Torah, so fine, I won't. But I want to tell you something interesting about how things work in the world. So he tells them, Nifura, Noket Nura Kami Pifura. When important people are going in a procession, so you're going to have a nifura, the torchbearer is going to walk in front of the pifura. Rashi relates the word pifura to the word apifur. In later on, they started using the title apifur based on this Gemara for the Pope. So in the times that Unculus is talking about, there's no pope yet, but in other words, the idea is some kind of higher ranking minister. Pifura Leduxa, in turn a Pifura, whatever his rank is, will, if they're walking together, will hold a torch on behalf of the Duke. The Duxa La Hegmoina, the Duke will hold on behalf of the Hegmoina, which is the governor of the province, the Hegmoina La Koima. And the Hegmoina, in turn, will hold it for the Koima. Rashi translates Koima as the king. Marshall says it doesn't necessarily have to mean the king. It just means an even higher level official. And in Latin, you have a word comes, which eventually became the word count in English, a high-ranking minister. So it might be the same thing over here. Whatever the case, Unculus's point is that you always have the lower-ranking one, the subordinate, holds the torch for the higher-ranking one. But says Unculus to them, Koima, me noket nura mikami inchi. You ever heard of a Koima, whatever his rank is exactly, holding a torch for ordinary people? Amrilay, they didn't know what he's getting at, of course, but they said no, and we never heard of such a thing. Omer Lahusei tells them, but I want to tell you something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nokat Nura Kami Yisrael. Hashem held a torch for the Jewish people when they were traveling in the desert. Dichtiv, as we find, Hashem Holech Lefneim Yomam. Hashem went before them by day, V'Gomer. So you see, in other words, look at that. Hashem is, so to speak, willing to set aside his dignity and hold the torch for his and hold the torch for his inferiors. And then he went on explaining to them in the same vein like that. Ben Yehoyada points out, he mentioned four different levels over here, four different levels of rulership. The Nefura doesn't count, he's only the torchbearer, corresponding to the four Malchias. And he's saying that nevertheless, though, even though you have each of those four Malchias was more powerful than the previous one, nevertheless, Hashem outranks all of them, nevertheless, Hashem held the torch for us in the desert. So they were very impressed by that and the other things that he did. Then they got interested, and then they bepashtos. Then Rabbi Nachman says, then they disobeyed and started talking in things of Torah after all. And sure enough, Igayo Kulu, all of them became Gavim. So the emperor tries again and sends yet a third group of soldiers to arrest Unkelus. And this time he tells them, don't have any conversation with him at all. As they were arresting him and going, now in the previous one, by the way, it's Kishakli Va'azli, which means they were already well on the way. Here it's when he's actually leaving his house. Kinaktile Va'azli, as they were grabbing him and about to go, the mancha pischa, Unkelus noticed the mezuzah by the entrance of the door, Oisiv Yodeale, and he placed his hand on it. This is, by the way, where we get the minhag of touching and kissing the mezuzah. It doesn't mention over here that he kissed it, but just that he touched it. And in fact, really, that is what it says. In earlier poskim, it doesn't say that what it actually says that you should place your hand on the mezuzah and say Hashem Yishmor Tzeisi Uvoi Me'atav Ad Olam. So the idea where it came from, kissing it, then I'm not sure. But in any case, certainly, I mean, it is a Jabba Shabbat Kedusha, anyway, so the Kitzah Shulchan Aruch actually seems to be the earliest source that actually says to kiss it. Be that as it may, anyway, he put his hand on it. Omalahu, and he says to them, my hi, what is this? Omalei, they said, what do you mean, what is this? How are we supposed to know? Emelana, you tell us. Omalahu, so he tells them, Minhoge shel olam, and apparently they were interested enough, their curiosity was piqued, so they're not going to go and obey what the emperor says to not talk with him. So Omalahu, so Unkelus says, Minhoge shel olam, you know, the way it works in the normal world, Melech bos of Adam, Yoshe b'mifnim, the human king sits in his palace inside, Va'avodim, Hashem Moshe b'machos, and his soldier and his servants guard him from the outside. V'ilo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Hashem, the other way around, avodav b'fnim, his servants are on the inside, v'hum shaman machutz, and Hashem watches us from the outside through the mezuzah. Shenema, Hashem yishmor tzeisoveh, that exact pasuk that we just said, that's brought in poskim, that the person should say a paraphrase of it when he's kissing the mezuzah, when he's touching his hand on the mezuzah. Hashem yishmor tzeisoveh, ha'me'atav adolam, Hashem, may Hashem guard you going out, you're coming in from now and forever. So the mezuzah represents Hashem's protection of us. So again, he used that as an opening to explain to them about the greatness of the Jewish people and Hashem and so forth. Igayur, and sure enough, they became Gerim. Tulei Shoder Basre, so the emperor stopped sending soldiers to try and arrest him. Later on, the Medrash says, eventually Unkelus himself came to see the emperor. I guess he first got a promise that the emperor is not going to harm him, and the emperor says, what do you think, to do such a thing, to become a Yid? And Unkelus explains to him the backstory in the Medrash is that Unkelus says to his uncle, the emperor, he says, I want to go out into the world and see how the world works outside the four walls of the Roman emperor's palace. So give me an idea. How should I go about doing business? And the emperor tells him to find something that seems to be undervalued, that has great value, but people don't realize, and buy that, and you'll sell it, and you'll make a nice profit on that. So now when he becomes a ger, he comes and tells the emperor, that's exactly what I did. You Romans look down on the Jews and think that they're nothings, but really I came to understand they're very, very valuable, and therefore I wanted to join them. The Gemara goes on. Going back to Antoninus and Levi, the pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem lo." Back when Rivka was pregnant with the twins Yaakov and Esav, Hashem told her. Meaning not she was a Nevi'a herself. Rashi says she went to Shem. Anyway, Shnei Goyim Bevitnich. There are two nations in your womb. So Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, Al Tikri Goyim El Geyim. Don't read Goyim as in nations, but Geyim meaning proud and important people. There is in fact a Kriyuk Siv over there where actually it is written in the Chumash, Geyim Gimul Yud, the Sefer Torah, Gimul Yud Yud Mem, and we read it as Goyim. So what does that mean? Ze Antoninus V'Revi. So that refers to Antoninus and Revi, who are the respective embodiments in their times of Yaakov and Esav, the respective descendants and embodiments of Yaakov and Esav, who were so important, so well provisioned with everything they could possibly want. Shalei poskum al shochonam. There was never lacking from their table. Like chazeres, neither lettuce. Like kishus, nor pumpkins or gourds or some vegetable like that, like snoin or radishes, neither during the summer nor during the winter. Now nowadays we wouldn't think of that as much as a chiddush. You can buy that in the store all year round, but precisely because they sell them in greenhouses or they grow them in other countries and import them. But back then it was a very unusual thing to be able to have such vegetables year round. So the fact that they were able to. And the fact that they were able to shows how rich they were, and therefore that justifies calling them Geyim, not proud as in Bala Gaiva, but proud as in like they're able to have tremendous resources at their disposal, even to have the kinds of vegetables for the people at their tables who normally nobody would be able to have in that season. Tosfos actually points out that radishes, the Gemara elsewhere says, are actually not good for you. So, as the Gemara itself discusses over there are different seasons sometimes during the year when radishes are good for you, some not. So that would explain that. Another possibility Tosfos says is the difference between the radish root and the radish and the radish leaves. Furthermore, Tosfos points out that Rebbe himself, the Gemara tells us in Ksubas, before he passed away, he lifted up his fingers to Shemayim and said, "I never had any hana from even with my 10 fingers from the world." So what do you mean over here? He has all these luxuries on his table. Tosfos says it was not for himself, but for the only people who are eating by his table. You have, besides his family, you have all kind of people from all over the place who are coming to visit Rebbe, being the Nasi of the Jewish people, both the Jews and Lahav Dor Goyim, and therefore he has to supply them, and was saying that he was able to supply them even with such out-of-season luxuries. And Tosfos furthermore points out the reason why we're mentioning vegetables is because they're used as appetizers. Marshall says, "So Taka, what do they do? They must have been growing them in things like caves or other things like that." So similarly nowadays, again, you know, when we have lettuce nowadays and it's in the middle of the winter, they're obviously not growing it locally. They're growing it someplace further away, or they're growing it in greenhouse or whatever, and shipping it. So they were able to have so for their time, that was a tremendous chiddush that they should be able to accomplish such a thing. So, in other words, Maharal says, the fact is that we're not just talking about them as individuals, we're talking about them as representatives of their respective nations. So that was the Shnei Goyim Bevitnich. The Gemara goes on. So what's so important about these vegetables? The Omamar, as we learn in a Brisa, Snoin Mechatech Oichol. Here, Tosfos was just saying that these things are necessary for digestion. So what specifically do they do? Radishes help cut up the food in the stomach. Chazeres Mechatech Meichol. The lettuce causes the food to turn over. So in other words, it gets better digested. Kishus Marchavas Me'ayim. Kishus Marchav Me'ayim. And the pumpkins or squashes or whatever they are, they widen the person's stomach so they're able to eat more. So each one of them, in other words, so each one of these vegetables has a certain effect on the digestion. And therefore, they would serve them to all the people who are by their table, all their dependents, and all the people who would visit them. And that was the chiddush. So the Gemara says, "V'hatan and Rabbi Shmuel lomenik Shmon kishuin." But we learn in a brisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel that the vegetable called kishuin is so called kishus. Before the Gemara, I called it kishus. Kishuin is another variant of the name. Why are they called kishuin? Shekoshin megufah shel adam kacharavis, because they're as bad and hard for a person's body as swords. And the answer is like kasha haber rav rabbi haber zuti. It depends whether we're talking about big or small ones. So Rashi elsewhere and Rabbi Hanan over here explain that the big ones are bad for you. The small ones are good for you. There are Mephoshim who learn the other way around. The small ones are not completely ripe, so therefore they're not good for you, and vice versa. The big ones that are completely ripe are good for you. So that's why they had them, because again they're good for the digestion. Now the Gemara says, so we learned in the Mishnah, Yom HaLeda V'Yom HaMisa. We said other days that are considered, that are Goyish Chagas, in particular Roman Chagas, where therefore, as we learned from the beginning of our Masechta, you're not allowed to do business with Goyim on those days or the days before them, whatever, includes also the day of birth and the day of death, meaning of the emperor. So the emperor's birthday and the day and his Yotzeit, so to speak. So the mayor had said across the board no matter what. But the Chachamim had said in the Mishnah that it depends what they do by the emperor's funeral. If they're the Mishnah had said that the Chacham said kol misa sheyesh ba sreifa, whenever the death involves burning the king's, whether it's burning keturas or whether it's burning the king's personal effects or whatever, so then that represents that there's avodah zarah there. But if not, then not, and therefore it's not considered a chaga. So, the Gemara says, Miklal did a mayor salva, so the implication seems to be that a mayor holds, Loishna misa sheyesh basreifa, Veloishna misa sheyin basreifa, Rameir evidently holds, doesn't matter whether there's sreifa or not, either way, Pauchi balavar is kechavim, either way, at the king's yurt site, they're going to be worshipping Avodah Zarah at least in the time of his successor, Rashi says. We talked about yesterday that generally speaking, among the Roman emperors, they weren't succeeded by their sons, but once in a while you would have a son who would succeed him. So at least during his son's times, if there was a son who succeeded him, then they'd be worshipping Avodah Zarah and whatever. Sounds like a mayor is saying. Alma, now we see from that, Sreifa Lav Chukah. We see from that that according to the mayor, there's no particular chukah, there's no particular chukah sadgoi that they have a normal practice of burning things by the king's funeral. Because we see, in other words, he's saying, in effect, that there's no difference whether they do that kind of ritual or not. Either way, his yortzeit is a day of Avodah Zarah. Miklal, now in turn, we can also deduce from that, Jirabonan Sabi, Sreifa Chukahi, evidently the Chachamim hold that the burning is considered a chukah. And in other words, so that kind of thing. So in other words, to burn the king's effects, to burn things when by the king's funeral, according to the Chachamim, would be a choik of Avodah Zarah. So now the question is, v'hatanya, but we learn in the Braisa, surfin ala malachim, when a Jewish king dies, then we burn things in his honor, v'loy b'darkei ha'amodi, and it's not considered darkei ha'amodi, where we know the Torah says you're not allowed to follow in the ways of the goyim. It says loy sasa k'maseyim, and various other similar psukim. The e chukahi, now if, as we just deduced, according to the Chachamim, apparently burning things by the king's funeral is a chuk of Avodah Zarah, and they say, therefore, that's the simon, that when they do that, then it shows that in the future years, when they commemorate the king's yortzeit, it means it's going to involve Avodah Zarah as well. If it's a chuk of the goyim, anan hechi safin, and how are we allowed to do it for Jewish kings? The Potik says, you're not allowed to follow in the ways of the goyim. Now, Tosfos discusses in some detail, so what's the problem? Fakir, it is a goyish achoik, but because it says in the Torah, then therefore we're doing it independently of theirs. In other words, when would we say it's chokas agoy? When they started something and then we take it up from them. Then we could say that's called chokas agoy, depending on the criteria that we'll talk about soon. But if it says in the Torah, then it means it's not something that we're doing independently of them. And then what's the problem? What's the problem with it being chokas agoy? So here, given that, so maybe you could say, as the Gemara is going to say, the Gemara is going to go on to bring, it says in Psukim about this concept of burning things by a king's funeral. So therefore, it's something independent of ours. And the fact that the goyim do the same thing is neither here nor there. So Tosfos discusses this in some detail. First of all, Tosfos explains that there's two different opinions over here. There is an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in Sanhedrin who says that when it comes to executing somebody with hereg, the Chacham say you execute him the way the goyim do by chopping off his head with a sword. Rabbi Yehuda argues that would be chukas ha-goy, and then therefore he prescribes a different method of doing it, also beheading him but in a different way. So we see, in other words. And Chacham replied back to him, that's not a problem, it's not chukas ha-goy, because we do it independently of them, we didn't learn it from them. So Rabbi Yehuda evidently doesn't agree with that concept, so therefore we could say that all Gemara goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. But then Tosfos goes on and discusses, there are really two different types of chukas ha-goy. There's one kind where they do it because it doesn't make any sense. It's just a hevel or shtus. It's just some superstition or something of theirs. So it doesn't necessarily depend on Avodah Zarah per se, but it's just something meaningless of theirs. So those we're not allowed to do. Then you have here, we're talking about the kind that they do in connection with Avodah Zarah. So now this question is, Rav Meir is holding it's not a chukah of Avodah Zarah. If it was a chukah of Avodah Zarah, then how could the Chum allow it? It says it in the Torah, but it doesn't matter. Once it becomes something involved with Avodah Zarah, then already, you know, the same way as a Matseva, for example, the same way you have the Ovis put up pillars, single stones in a couple of places to worship Hashem on, to bring Korbanos, but for us Jews, it's Osir, because the Goyim eventually took that up as a regular thing, and it's still called the Chukah Seim Leiseleichu. So that's when it brings in Shulchan Aruch, you have a Yerodei, there's a Simen on Chukas HaGoy, then you actually have, that's one of the distinctions that's made, is whether the thing has to do with Avodah Zarah or not, but also whether, if it's not for Avodah Zarah, is it something that has a logical basis or not. One of the famous things, for example, that the Poskim brought is, let's say, you know, there came a point when in history when doctors would wear a particular uniform, and that would, you'd see, you know, nowadays they have the white lab coats or whatever, and you would recognize them as a doctor by that. So the Poskim say that kind of thing is not a problem for a Yid to wear. It's something that the Goyim started, but there's a logical reason. You want to be able to recognize that the person's a doctor, so that's fine. So you have the details about that. Among the poskim, what exactly is and isn't allowed, but those are among the considerations that factor into it. Anyway, the Gemara continues. So the question was again that so the question was that that them burning things for their getchkas seems to be according to the Chachamim seems to be Dauke Hamurdi. So how are we allowed to do it? And again, according to Tosfos, the question is that since it became a choik, since apparently it became a choik of Avodah Zarah, because in the Mishnah, the Chachamim are saying whenever they do Seifa, means there's going to be Avodah Zarah involved in the funeral and the Yotzeit afterwards, then how are we allowed to do such a thing? So the Gemara answers now. The answer is neither Rabbi Akiva nor the Chacham are going to hold that Sreifa, that burning things by the king's funeral, is considered a chukah, so it has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah, and there's a logical, and it has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah, and as far as a logical basis, there's a logical reason, El Chashivusihi. It's showing that he's important. It's showing that we're in sire over the fact that he died, and like nobody is worthy of using his things again. So in the connection with that, then they might worship Avodah Zarah. V'hochem if the geese and machlokas would be as follows. Reb Meir saw v'loshna misa sheyesh v'sreifa v'loshna misa shein v'sreifa pachi b'alavodas v'chavim. Reb Meir says it doesn't matter whether they burn things by his funeral or not, either way. Every year on the king's yotzeit, they're going to worship Avodah Zarah. But Abbanan Savri, the Chum hold, no, it depends. When they burnt something by the king's funeral, it showed that he was beloved and important to them, and therefore Pa'o Pa'chiba. Therefore, in future years, they will worship Avodah Zarah on that day. But She'en Basrefa, if they didn't burn anything, Loi Chashiva, then it shows he obviously wasn't important to them, and then they're like Pa'chiba, and therefore they're not going to bother worshiping Avodah Zarah on his yotzeit anyway. So in other words, at first the Gemara had assumed that no matter what, they're going to celebrate his yotzeit. And the question is then whether they did Avodah Zarah by his funeral or not. And now the answer is fakert. Now the answer is fakert. If they burn things by his funeral, then it shows that now they're going to make it. Now it's going to become on a part of the calendar of Chogas, at least during his successor's time. And then therefore now it's considered a Chogah of theirs. If they never burnt anything in the first place, then it shows that they're not celebrating his yotzeit in that way. And therefore you'd be allowed to do business with them. In this connection, actually, there's a cute, a fascinating and cute explanation from Rabbi Yonis and Ivershitz that he explains in connection with Achashverosh and Vashti, the whole thing. Vashti refuses to come and appear by his party. and he consults the Chachamim Yodei Itim. First it says he consulted the Chachamim, and then the Chachamim kind of evaded him because they realized no matter what, whether we go in favor of Ahasuerus or in favor of Vashti, we're going to get ourselves in trouble. So therefore they told him, we can't deal with it. Go to your Goyish advisors and ask them. So why is he going to Jewish Chachamim in the first place? And the Pasuk makes a point that they were Yodei HaItim. They know the times, as in they're experts at calculating the calendar. So sort of Yonason goes and makes an elaborate calculation to demonstrate that that on this seventh day of Ahasuerus' party, he learns, was actually the first day Pesach. Now, that was also the day, several years earlier, that Vashti's father, Belshazzar, had been killed and the Babylonian Empire had been overthrown. So basically, Rabbi Yonasan explains, Ahasuerus wanted to know, is it truly now the 15th of Nisan? If so, then you know what? She has an excuse. It's her father's Yortzeit, and as we're saying over here, the Goyim commemorate the Yortzeits of their kings, the fact that he was her father, and in that case, I'll give her a break, that she has good reason to say that I'm not appearing at the party. But if it's not, then she deserves trouble, then she deserves punishment. And the Chacham didn't want to get involved, and they evaded him, and eventually he went to his ministers, Kaush and Ashesar, and the rest of them. So the Gemara says, Gufa, getting back to what we said before, Serf and Alam Alochim, when a Jewish king dies, you're allowed to burn things by his funeral. You're allowed to burn his personal effects by his funeral. The Ein Bo Mishum Darchei HaMerdi, and it's not Darchei HaMerdi, and it's not Bal Tashchis either, by the way, Tosfos points out, because it's not Tzar Bal Chaim, if it's animals, or Bal Tashchis, if it's not, because there's a reason in it. It's the covet of the king. The covet of the king is equal to the covet of the whole Jewish people, and therefore that's a valid reason to be doing such a thing. So Shenema, and we find a pasuk where such a thing is told. Yumiya says to Tzidkiyahu, he says, Tzidkiyahu, Nebuchadnezzar is going to capture Yerushalayim, and his soldiers are going to capture you, and you're going to be taken to Babel as a prisoner. However, Yumiya says to Tzidkiyahu, B'shalom tamus, you will die in peace, meaning you're not going to be executed by Nebuchadnezzar. Over Mr. First, in fact, what actually happened was he was in jail for many years, then Nebuchadnezzar finally dropped dead, and then they let Tzidkiyahu out of jail, and then he passed away shortly after that. So he did die in peace, having gotten to see that Nebuchadnezzar, his arch enemy, was dead and then degraded. And Yirmiyah continues, and over Mr. First, Hamalochim, and same kind of burnings that they did for your ancestors, the previous kings of Yehuda, so they're going to do by your funeral. So since it says in the pasuk, then therefore it's allowed. And again, Tosfos says that the Gemara had assumed that maybe there's Avodah Zarah in it, and maybe therefore it should be also, even if it says in the pasuk. But the answer is that no, it's not that there's Avodah Zarah involved in the burning per se. It's that once they burn, it shows that he's such a chosh of a king that in future years they will commemorate his Yortzeit with Avodah Zarah. And the Braita continues, Hashem shesurf and alam alochim, the same way as we burn things in honor of a king who passed away, kach surf and alam anasiim, the same way we burn in honor of the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. In later times, when the Jewish people didn't have a king, but they had a Nasi, then the Nasi stands in place of the king as far as that kind of thing. Umahim sofer amalachim, what do they burn when a king, or we're saying a Nasi, passes away? Mitosan uklei tashmishin. We burn their bed and their other personal effects. It shows like they're so important that nobody else is worthy of using their things. It happened when Gamliel HaZaken passed away, the son of Unkelos HaGeir, Shivim Monat 30, Unkelos the Geir, the one from the top of our Amud, burnt 70 Sur is a city that produced a silver coinage, 70 30 monas worth or weight of things that he burnt. In other words, to show how important Gamliel is. The word HaZaken over here is on the side, it says maybe it shouldn't be. Unkelos became a ger long after Gamliel HaZaken passed away, about 20 years before Churban Bayis Sheni. Unkelos wasn't around at that time. Whether he was a nephew of Titus or Adrianus, they lived later. So therefore, Pashtos the Girsa should be Gamliel without HaZaken. And then in that case, so it means that it actually means Gamliel the Yavne. Now he was in Gamliel's times, so he burnt 70 30 mana. 30 mana is like a high quality coin, and it represents also a unit of weight, so he's burning all those things in honor of Ram Gamliel. There's a medrash someplace where they asked him how are you doing, why are you doing so much? And he says to them, listen, you know, I know how it is among the Romans. They make a huge funeral pyre like that in honor of the emperor. Ram Gamliel was certainly no less important than any emperor. So, yeah. So the Gemara goes on. So now you're saying that Unkelos burnt 70 monet sodi. It sounds like he burnt actual silver coins. So the question is, what do you mean? We just said that you burn their bed and their personal effects. So what is Unkelos doing burning coins over here? So the answer is, that's what it means. Ema bishivim monet sodi. It doesn't mean that he burnt 70, doesn't mean that he burnt 70 sodi mona. It means things that were equal, the value of 70 sodi mona, or the weight maybe of 70 monet soda, of 70 sodi mona. So the Gemara asks, you're telling me they don't burn anything else by a king's funeral, only his bed and his personal effects. Well, Tanya, we learn another braisa about Jewish kings. Oikrin ala malachim, we hamstring the king's horse when he dies. So hamstringing means that you're cutting. Rashi describes you have the nerves that are by the heels by the hooves of the animal. You cut those. So now the animal in the future can walk, but it can't it can't gallop. It can't go quick. It can't whatever. Yeah. So in English it's called hamstringing. So you're allowed to do that. Now it's not useful for malacha anymore. And that's not considered darche hamodi. So we see, in other words, that it's not only that they burn his bed and so forth, it's also they do this. And again, as Tosfos points out, it's not a problem of tzar bal chayim because it's an honor of the king, which is the honor of the Jewish people, and therefore that's fine. The point is, we see it's more than just his bed and his klei tashmish. So the answer is, we don't just mean any horse, the particular horse that the king rode on, so it's one of klei tashmish. Fine, the Gemara asks, so behemoth to hurt a loy. So you're telling me that we never do that kind of thing, the oikrin, to kosher animals as well. And kosher animals, the king is not using as a personal thing, because either, you know, they shecht it and they eat it, or they use it for example, to plow, they use it for milk, they use it to plow a field for him or whatever, fine, but that's not direct service to him. And yet we find, well, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, iko sheyesh batrei for osir. You're not allowed to do the kind of ikur that would cause the animal to be trefa. So you have to be careful where you're cutting the nerve. It's true, it actually says, you're not going to be having enough from it, but nevertheless, you're not allowed to cause biadayim for an animal to become trefa. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says, wait a minute, what are we talking about? Kodshim over here? We're talking about chulin. It's just a matter of baltashkis. So what's the difference? No, Tosfos says what it means is osur means it would be osur to eat. In other words, it becomes trefa. So then in that case, you'd say, then what's the chiddush? And the answer is that the point is not so much it's also to eat. Obviously, if it's shreifa, it's also to eat. The point is it's mutar b'hana. We're not going to say because of the covenant of the king, that animal afterwards is going to be also b'hana. It remains mutar b'hana. If the ikur is done without making the animal trefa, mutter, then it would be mutter. So according to Rashi, means it would be mutter to do that kind of operation then. And according to Tosfos, it would be mutter, meaning that even the animal would be allowed to be eaten afterwards, because not trefa, so therefore you don't have that problem. And there's not the issue of covered amelach, and therefore you're allowed to.
The first I saw you were saying that by a regular animal, you don't do things, but now you're
so saying. That's the question. That's what Gemara is asking. So far we said we do it by the king's horse, but a horse you're not going to eat anyhow. But now, this braisa is saying that there's a difference how the ikur was done, whether the animal is trefa or not, implying that we're talking about kosher animals. So again, according to Rashi, the point is if it's a kosher animal, you're not allowed to cause it to be a dying to become trefa. According to Tosfos, that's not the problem, but rather the braisa is saying, if the animal is a kosher animal, then in the first case, where you did an ikur sheyesh b'trefa, because it's trefa, you won't be allowed to eat it. You would have been allowed to eat it, it was the king's animal, doesn't matter, but now you can't because it's trefa, but then you have, if you were careful to do it in a way that's not trefa, then you're actually even allowed to eat the animal afterwards.
But why would we be doing it on an animal that wasn't?
Well, that's what we have to figure out. Okay. The ezu ikur she'en b'trefa, but first the braisa says, what is the definition of an ikur where it doesn't make the animal trefa? Hamanasher pausisseh min al-kubo lamata, where he cuts off and removes the hooves below the al-kubo, below the lowest segment of the leg, or any place further down on the leg. So therefore, that doesn't make it a trefa. Now again, if we're talking about trefa and kosher, then obviously we're talking about a kosher species of animal. So then the question is, we were only saying before the king's horse. The king doesn't ride on an ox or anything like that. And the answer is Tilgum and Rapapa, the Egla HaMashachas B'Karin. Rapapa explained this last braisa is talking about, for example, a cow or a young calf that was pulling the king's wagon. So that's considered Klei Tashmisha, because it directly, it's like the engine of his car, you know, so therefore it's...
Well, a king would have wouldn't use the grading to use a cow to pull.
You why not? You have some...
donkeys and strong animals.
You could also egglo, like, you sometimes use not a cow, then an ox, whatever, it's kind of, listen, you know, you have in the turtle, a safish, the shirt of a homo yachtav, you have sometimes that, sometimes oxen are used for that purpose, to pull a wagon. So in that case, if it was an ox or some other kosher animal like that, then yes, it means that it was the king's personal servant, and then therefore then you do the ikkur afterwards. Okay. So relating to our Mishnah, then the point is, again, we have the mayor saying that if they do sreifa, if they do these kinds of things, the burning effects, by the burning things by his funeral, and hamstringing his horses, and so on and so forth, then it means that he's a chosh of a king, and therefore in future years they commemorate his yotzeit with avodah zarah. And the mayor says either way, whether they did that or not, every year they commemorate his yotzeit as a day of avodah zarah. And the chum hold that no, only if they did that, then it shows that he's important to them, otherwise not.
Well, the guy would have
the guy we're talking about.
Yidin was
no, so we're saying by Yidin, obviously, I don't remember for the Zara. By Yidin, we have to know that such a thing is mutter. And the Rambam brings the halacha and Hilchos Malachim. When a Jewish king dies, we do that. We burn his personal effects, and we whatever. Doesn't say any such thing. One interesting thing that came up in that regard after Gimel Tammuz, today is Gimel Tammuz. After that, the little compartment over there in the oil where the Rebbe would daven privately over there, shortly after that it burnt down. So almost like Alderach, it may have been after Chavzayin Adar, I don't remember, but it was almost like Min HaShemayim, the same kind of thing. Only the Rebbe could use it, nobody else, and therefore it was removed Min HaShemayim. Yeah. All right. The Gemara goes on. Now, the Mishnah had said, Yom Tiglachas Zikonoi, that there was a day when an individual goy shaves his hair, or shaves his beard, or his blurus, his trup, that he grows in honor of Avodah Zarah. So every so often he shaves it off, and then he makes a chog of it. So the Mishnah had said, that kind of thing is a personal day of Avodah Zarah for him, so you're not allowed to do business with him on that actual day, but it doesn't apply to any other goy, even we said even dependents of his, and it doesn't apply to days before it as well. So the Gemara says, Yiboylehu, Heichi Katani. Now we say, Yem Tiglachas Konoi of Lurisoi. Now there's two ways we can understand that. The word Tiglachas could be referring to the beard or the chup, or it could be that it refers to only one of them. So Heichi Katani, what does the Mishnah mean? Yem Tiglachas Konoi Vahanochas Lurisoi. Does it mean the day on which he shaves off his beard in honor of Avodah Zarah, or the day on which he starts growing a bluris in honor of Avodah Zarah? Or maybe it means Yom Tiglachas Konei VeHavoras Blurisei. Maybe it means the day that he shaves his beard, or the day that he shaves off his blurus, just his trup. And in that case, Marsha explains then that in that case we would say on that day he only cuts off his blurus and nothing else. But what does the Mishnah mean? So the Gemara says Toshma. So Toshma, the Tony Tavai, the Tani Tavayu, we learn a Braisa that mentions both of them. Yom Tiglachas Konei V'Hanochas Bluris. One Braisa says the day on which he shaves his beard and starts growing his Bluris. And the second one says Yom Tiglachas Konei V'Havoras Bluris. Another day when he shaves his beard and removes his Bluris. So it's both. In other words, you have three things. You have when he shaves his beard, when he starts growing his Bluris, and when he decides he's grown the Bluris enough and shaves it off. All those three things involve Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos points out that when they started growing the blurus and when they finished growing it, they would shave their beard, which is why both Braises mentioned the beard. Okay. So anyway, the point is, again, in other words, so that's a day of a chogah for the individual goy, but they said, therefore, you're not allowed to do business with him, but other goyim, it doesn't apply, even the ones who are dependents and whatever, because they don't necessarily join in that celebration, and it's not also even for him for 3 days beforehand. But the Gemara says, so now that we went through all the chogas of the Romans that are listed in our Mishnah and explained them, so now the Gemara explains, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Oid Acheres Yesh Lehem B'Roimi. There is one more chogah that they have in Rome that was not mentioned in our Mishnah. And the Gemara will explain later on, so Taka, why doesn't the Mishnah list it? So it's like this. Achas l'shivim shana, once every 70 years, Mevi'im Odom Sholem, they bring a whole healthy person representing Esav, And Umapivin Oisal Odom Chigir, they have him ride on the shoulders of a man who's lame, representing Yaakov, who was lame after the fight with the Malach. So they're representing, in other words, with this pantomime, they want to represent that Esav is on top of Yaakov. Umabishin Oisad Bigder Odomarishin, they have the intact one, the one who's riding on the shoulders, they would dress him in the clothes of Odomarishin, which belonged to Esav. We find that the Esav had his Bigder Esav B'noha Godol HaMudos, the ones that Rivka dressed Yaakov in. Now, there are Midrashim that say that afterwards Yaakov hid those clothing, but apparently Or Gemara doesn't hold of that and holds that in fact they still continued to have them, and eventually it was passed down to the Romans. So they dressed this man in the clothes of Odomarishin, representing, in other words, they're saying this is the perfection of what a human being should be. They're saying that Esav and we, his successors, the Romans, are what a person should really be. So umanichin leberoshay kakfiloi shor Rabbi Shmuel. On his head they put the kakfiloi of Rabbi Shmuel. Now Rabbi Shmuel, we know, is one of the Asura Arugin Malchus. We have in Eila Ezra that we say in Yom Kippur, we describe, and also in Avzei Alavonim that we say in Tisha B'Av, we describe very vividly there based on the Midrashim how they strip the skin off his face, because he was very beautiful, and the emperor's daughter sees him and wants to keep that beauty. So now they had that skin, and they kept it, and they kept it in the treasuries of Rome, and they'd attach it to this person on the top. They'd attach it to him like a mask to represent, again, in other words, that he has the greatest beauty in the world. I guess they preserved it. They're able to preserve things. So they did that. The Tolole Bixavre, they hung around this person's neck, Masko Resh Zuza de Pisa, 200 Zuz, or a different gear is Dalad Zuzi, or four Zuz, or Tof Zuzi, 400 Zuz, different gear size, of weight of Pisa, of Paz, which is a very precious kind of stone, which is not commonly found. But they had that to represent. In other words, like we have, we're the Romans, we're on top of everything, and we have as much Paz as anybody could possibly want, even though in the rest of the world you can barely find it. Tosfos actually points out that Gemara and Gittin in the sugya about the Churban over there says that there really is only a tiny amount of Paz in the world. Rome has half of it; the rest of the world has the other half. But it's only an Estira, which is a lot less than a Zuz. And here we're saying four, even more Zuzim. So Tosfos says that the Gemara there, when it says Trini Estira, doesn't literally mean two Estiras; it just means a very small amount. So of the amount of Paz that's in the world, the Romans have no less than half of it, and here therefore they're able to take two or four. 400 or whatever the gears is, Zuz of that pad, and hang it around this guy's neck to show how choshuv he is. They paved the streets of Rome with Enoch, which is onyx, precious stone. We had the other day, actually, that when the Romans, hundreds of years earlier, when they were fighting against the Greeks, and eventually they went to arbitration, they pointed out you have a progression over there. You have pearls, then you have precious stones, and even more important than that is Enoch. So now they're taking this Enoch, this precious, this super precious stone, and they're using it to pave the walkways of Rome during this festival. All of this represents, in other words, the enormous amount of Gashmias that they have in this world. Umachrizin Lafanab, they would make the following announcement as this procession is walking around. Sachkiri, the calculation of this master plaster is false. Namely, Yaakov told his children, get ready, there's going to be Achrisei Yomim, Mashiach is going to come. So they're claiming, this is Kozov, this is plaster, this is false. It's not going to happen. They're claiming there's not going to be a Geula from all rulership, they're saying. So according to that, Kiri, the master, refers to Yaakov. So they're saying, you know, we understand Yaakov deserves to be called a master, but he's not as important. Tosfos says, though, so why are they calling Yaakov a master at all? So no, actually, Tosfos says, Kiri, the master over here, refers to Yitzchak. Yitzchak gave the brachas to Esav, but he gave the main brachas to Yaakov, but he gave brachas to Esav as well. But he said, so here he gave the brachas that he gave to Yaakov. They're claiming plaster are meaningless and false.
So the same person gave the
same bracha. He gave the bracha to Esav as well. Says, but right now, we have the brachas, and Yaakov doesn't. So therefore, they're saying, as far as we're concerned, the fact that the master, that Yitzchak, gave brachas to Yaakov is false, and it's not happening. They continue with their announcement. Achur de Marana, the brother of our master being Esav, so his brother is Yaakov, Zayafna is a forger. So in other words, here, like they're saying, this lame man who's carrying this healthy person is Yaakov, and he's a forger and he's a faker. They continue, here, Yaakov tricked and faked to get the brachas from Esav, and what good did it do? He's now on bottom and we're on top, they're saying. And they continue, d'chomi chomi, anybody who sees this procession is going to see it, or d'lechomi, lechomi, anybody who doesn't see it is never going to get to see it, because we're doing it only once every 7 years. Most people don't live that long. So in other words, basically everybody come and see now, because otherwise you're never going to have a chance to see it again in your lifetime. They continue. Maya.
Times I'm still living 140 those days.
What?
Those days they lived on.
No. We're talking about the times of the Romans. People live in lifespans like we do now. No, people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nobody lives there. Once in a while, you have a person lives. Obviously, listen, nowadays also, yeah, sometimes people live to 80 or 90, but they're a clown, most people, you know, yeah. Okay, anyway. So they continue. What good did the cheater do with his cheating? Yaakov cheated his way into the brachas. So they're saying, what good did it do him? What good did the forger, did the faker do with his fakery that here he thought he got the brachas and he thought he's going to be on top? And look at that, we're on top. So this was almost Simon Bahochi, and they would finish their announcement as follows. Vaila Dane Kad Yokum Dane. Woe to this one when that one stands up. So in other words, they're saying, after all, they're saying that there is going to come a time when Yaakov rises and they realize then we're going to be in trouble. So at least they admit that, right. There is actually Eitz Yosef on and Yaakov explains that actually that part they would say in Lashon Kodesh. So even though the Gemara is quoting it over here in Aramaic, and they themselves, Pashtus, would have been saying it in Latin, but the Eitz Yosef says they said this in Lashon Kodesh. They don't want the regular people to understand. They, the intelligentsia, realize that yes, eventually everything they're saying is not true, but nonetheless, though, they don't want the people to know that.
Okay,
anyway,
built-in sheker.
Well, so that's the Gemara points out. There is a built-in sheker to it. Omer of Ashi said, Hichshilam piyam l'rishoyim. In this phrasing that they use, the Rishoyim themselves are tripped up by their own tongues. Because Iomu Zayafna Achur Demarana, if they had said the faker, the brother of our master, then it would mean that yes, it means they're calling Yaakov the faker. Kidakami, then it would mean what they say. Hashda Amri Demarana Zayafna. But now they say the brother of our master, the faker. That makes it that now the word the faker can refer to our master, Esav, Marona Gufe Zayafnahu. So it's like they're subconsciously admitting that their master, Esav, is himself the real faker. The Maharal has a long explanation, a long symbolic explanation of this whole thing. Yaakov is really the true Adam. He has the Tzelem Elokim. We even find that his beauty was akin to that of Adam Rishon. Esav, on the other hand, to a certain extent, looks like Yaakov as well, and therefore they're saying that they're having this whole procession to show that who is it that really has the beauty and the true reality is Esav, who is intact, rather than Yaakov, who was injured by the Malach, and having the clothes of Adam Rishon represents the cupboard of Adam Rishon, and so on and so forth, and he goes in Barichos over there of all the details, all the symbolism that they do over here, that they want to demonstrate that if you want to know what a real human being is and what Hashem created, what Hashem created the world for, it's for us, the people of Esav. But now Rav Ashi is pointing out, so they themselves say, Vayla Dein Kad Yokum Dein, they realize, in other words, yes, we're riding on top, and that means we have a tremendous Memshala, but nevertheless, we realize that eventually that's going to turn around, and Yaakov is going to be riding on top of us. And then Rav Ashi points out, on top of that, even their own wording is showing that they themselves realize subconsciously that all of this success of theirs is only temporary. It's only an Olam Hazeh, and there's yet to be an Olam Haba. So that was another festival. That was another time of Avodah Zarah that the Romans would have. So Gemara says, "V'tani didan my time like a choshev law." So why doesn't our Tana list that? Why does Rabbi Yehuda have to tell us that? The answer is, "L'hai de'isa b'chol shata b'shata k'choshev." The Mishnah is only listing things that they celebrated every year. The lesser b'chol shata b'shata like a choshev. They didn't list the ones that only happened like here once every 70 years. So they didn't. As far as, by the way, that last part, Vayla Dein Kad Yokum Dein, besides which the explanations that we said, that they are saying it because they themselves realize, and they're saying it in Lashon Kodesh, there are other explanations that maybe that's the Gemara editorializing. Right now, they're powerful, but you should realize, we Jews, when we learn this Gemara, we should realize Vayla Dein Kad Yokum Dein. And then there are a couple of other explanations. Okay. So the Gemara says, Hani Diremoi. So far we've been going through and we've been describing all the chogas of the Romans. Now, the Gemara was written in Babel, which is ruled over by the Persians. Now we need to know what are the Persian chogas that we need to know the same rules apply to, because after all, they worship Avodah Zarah as well. So my answer is their holidays are called Mutardi, Beturiaski, Muharniki, Umuharin. So these are all chogas that were known in their times. Some of them, by the way, continued without Avodah Zarah, even after eventually the Persians, the Iranians became Muslim. They still kept some of these chogas. They just don't do the same way, Lahabdala, you know, same way, for example, the Christians have Xmas, which is taken over from Saturnalia of our Mishnah, and they have New Year's taken over from Kalenda, but they don't, you know, they have their own religious things in it, but they obviously don't worship the same Getchkas as them. The same way, for example, into the they asked the Goinim what to identify these four for us. The Goinim said two of them, the Goinim living a few hundred years after the Gemara was written, they said two of them are not celebrated anymore, Bechlau. The other two will tell you what they're called nowadays in our time. One of them actually, Muharin, they have a girsa, something like Nuharuz or something like that, and Adayemazeh, the Persians have, their new year is called Noruz. So there's an example of one that survived from the time of the Gemara till now, but nowadays it's not a chog of Avodah Zarah of theirs anymore. So the Gemara says, what about Hani Deparsoya Duremoi? Fine, that takes care of the Persian and Roman chogas. Udebavloimai, what about the people in Babel? They're ruled over by the Persians, but they still have their own chogas. And the answer is, they have, some of them are the same. Muharniki, which was one of the Persian ones, they have as well. Vaknise, Bechanuni, Ve'eser Ba'adr. Those are their four major chogas during the year. The Gemara continues, Omer of Chonan Barav Chista, Omer Rav, Va'amilo Omer of Chonan Barav Omer Rav, Chamisha Bote Avodis Chachovim Kvurin Hein. There are five fixed places of Avodah Zarah in the world of that time, where, in other words, unlike in most places, they worship their Getchkas only on certain days, only on the various Chogas that we just had the lists of. But now there are certain places where every single day of the year, they are worshiping Avodah Zarah there, and therefore you have to be careful. You can't do business with anybody over there, in other words. And what are they? Eluhain, they are as follows. Base Bel Babel. In Babel, you have a temple of the idol Bel. So every day they're worshipping Bel over there. Or base Nevoi Bekursi. In a city called Kursi, they have a temple in honor of Nevoi. Another Getchka, but Bursi, if it says on the side, it should be. Tarasa Shabbat Mapog. In a place called Mapog, they have a place called Tarasa, they have a temple called Tarasa. Srifa Shabbat Ashkelon. In Ashkelon, in Eretz Yisrael, they have a place called Srifa. Nishra Shabbat Arabia. And in Arabia, they have a place called Nishra. Interestingly, some Rishonim learn that Nishra is identical with Mecca, which is where Adar Yom Hazeh, the Arabs have their black stone that they have processions and rituals and everything in connection with it. The majority opinion of Rishonim, including the Rambam in particular, who lived among the Muslims and knew them well, says that Islam is not Avodah Zarah, because they believe in the same one Hashem as we do. They hold that Muhammad was his Navi, etc., and they believe in all kinds of Shtusim, but Avodah Zarah it's not, says the Rambam. But there are Rishonim who say that actually the fact that they have their stone over there, and they go in processions around it, and they have a place nearby there where they throw stones and whatever, so they say this is like a form of Melkolus worship, and it's a continuation of this Nishra Shabbat Arviya that we're saying over here, and therefore, according to some Rishonim, Islam is actually considered Avodah Zarah. Anyway. As I said, the mainstream opinion is that not, and I believe that's accepted in general halacha, which is negeya, for example. Let's say you're not allowed to go into a church, but you would be allowed to go into a mosque if need be. So those five, a ki osir of dini, when Rav Dini came from Eretz Yisrael, he said there's more that you have to add to the list. Ha'isifu aleihem, the Chachamim added also, yirid shebein bechi, the fair at Ein Bechi, they have a constant year-round fair over there, and they're always worshipping Avodah Zarah. Nidbacha Shabakoi, and a place in Akoi called Nidbacha. Ikadami Nitzbara Shabakoi. Another version is the name is not Nidbacha, but Nitzbara. Rav Dimi Min Arda, Masni Itcha, Rav Dimi Min Arda, which is different than the previous Rav Dimi, had a different version of those last two. It's the other way around. Yerid Shabbat Akka, Nidbacha Shabbat Ein Bechi. The one in Akka is called the Yerid. The one in Ein Bechi is called Nidbacha. Interestingly, as far as Ein Bechi, there was a place in Syria, and there's a place in Syria where they have ancient ruins called Baal Bek, which is Ein Bechi or the Baal Bechi, whatever. And they have, there's the ruins of an enormous temple over there built out of gigantic stones. Nidbacha literally means a Nidbach is a row of stones. So it might be that that's what the Gemara is referring to over here, that ancient temple over there built out of these rows of gigantic stones, and that was a place of constant Avodah Zarah. Anyway. So, Omelet of Chonon Rav Chistel of Chista Mike Vuinhen, what does this mean? That they're permanent, and therefore what? Omelet, Hachiyama, Vuodimach, your mother's father, which is Rav, so you said, Kvuinhen La'olam means they're constantly used for Avodah Zarah all year round, Tadira Kulashata, Palchilahu, exactly that, all year round. They're making Chogas, they're bringing Korbanos over there. So the result is, in other words, you would never be allowed to do business with anybody who has to do with such places. So any goy who goes over there, or any of the priests or whatever over there, you wouldn't be allowed to do business with them all year round, because every single day they're worshipping the Avodah Zarah, and if you do business with them, they're going to use it for Korbanos, or go thank the Getchka or whatever everything that we've been talking about so far. Okay. The Gemara continues, Amar Shmuel, Bagoila, in the Goila, outside Eretz Yisrael, where it's difficult to not do business with the Goyim, because they might harm us, because they might, Rashi explains that, first of all, Parnasa Seinu Mehen, in practice, we live among the Goyim, and we kind of depend on them for Parnasa. And in addition, also, they're going to get angry, and there's going to be a problem of Eva, and you're going to have it might be dangerous. So Shmuel says, Bagoila, Eina also, Elayim Eidem Movad, then you're only allowed to not do business with them on the Chog itself. You don't have 3 days before. When it's 1 day, you're not doing business, okay, it so happens, you know, you couldn't make it today. But so therefore it's not gonna cause Eva, and it's not gonna cause a loss of Parnassa. So the Gemara says, "V'yoyim edim nami mi osir." So are you telling me then, Shmuel saying on the Chaga itself it would be also to do business with them? V'ha Rabbi Yehuda shori le Beruna l'zabuni chamra. We find that Rabbi Yehuda gave a heter to the Beruna, or Rav Kahana, it says on the side over here, to sell wine to the Goyim, even on the Chaga. Although Rav Gidol l'zabuni chitin, he gave permission to Rav Gidol to sell wheat. The Arab merchants. So Rashi describes, in other words, this would be once a year when everybody gets together and they have a public party and they worship Avodah Zarah and Rashi translates it with a French word that means like a company of people, like they gather together for like a one day convention kind of. And so Rabbi Yehuda allowed Rabbi Runa and Rabbi Gidol respectively to sell them wine and wheat. Now, why? If they're worshipping Avodah Zarah. And the answer is Shani Chag Sedetai de la Kviya, because that kind of festival of the Sochrim is not fixed. Some years they don't even do it at all. So it's not necessarily with the Roman one, we said they do it every 70 years, but it's scheduled every 70 years. Here it's not always scheduled. Whenever they get around to it, then they do it. So therefore, so it's not considered so important. And it should be also, so therefore, if they don't even bother making it every year, so they're not so concerned about worshipping Avodah Zarah to the extent where now you do business with them, they're going to be thankful to their Getchka, etc. It's not a problem, and therefore you are allowed to do business with them even on that day. But regular chagas that are actually celebrated every year, then that not. So as Shmuel is saying, only on that day, as we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, there are a variety of points that we show and bring up of why nowadays it's mutter even on the Chogas itself, including, for example, that they don't really worship Avodah Zarah, and a variety of other reasons.